Let's start with the set aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help us to glorify you by carrying your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we're in doctor's opinion. Going through it for, I don't know, be 14 years that we, in about a month from when we started the meeting, and I don't know how many times we've covered doctor's opinion because we have three meetings a week, but I see something new all the time, and I have no idea what I said last time I went through these pages, and let's see what we can find today. I was thinking, though, the doctor, when he wrote this letter, he didn't expect it to be in a book that would be read, 83 years later, you know? And he didn't sign his name to it when in the original book, because the ideas he expressed were not accepted by the medical community. In fact, the medical community had no idea how to deal with us. I don't think they wanted to deal with us. And they had no understanding of the disease of alcoholism, what made us an alcoholic, and the spiritual malady. And they certainly didn't have any idea of the solution. And some of that may be still true today, because some of the treatment concepts used may not really understand the problem and the spiritual problem. Doing a lot of writing and these complicated worksheets on the internet have tried to replace the instructions in the big book. And the only thing I could say about the big book versus any of that, and I'm not saying that's bad, but the big book worked. The directions in here, the way it's laid out, worked. And we know it worked because we're still reading it today. And there are people in this room like Clint who did this, and 6 years later, look at them, look at their life. And so they're describing their testimony, their experience of how they were able to recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And what we're going to read today is going to show us not only some of the problem, but the how the solution looked to the doctor. Now, he didn't know how to get to the solution, and he says that, but he can see how it looked, and we call it having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. There's only one result of the steps, the spiritual awakening. But in the initial, it was called spiritual experience. And he's going to describe how he sees that, how it looks, because a lot of people don't understand what that means. I'm doing some talks at home. I did one part on spiritual awakening. We have the daughter and grandkids all visiting, so it may take a while. Maybe that's good till I do part two, be a few days. But. What does it look like? And we're going to see how it looks like here. On XX, I think I'll just read, and morning, XXVII, the bottom. I think it's really important that everyone who comes to AA, all addicts, no matter what your addiction, I think this paragraph is true. Men and women drink or do whatever they're addicted to, because they like the effect produced by it. It does something to us. I ask people why they drink, and they say, one guy told me he liked the taste of beer. I said, well, good. What did it do for you? It took a while to get to that. It does something for us. And what it does is it does to us what the promises on page 83 and 84 do for us through God. God working in our lives. And they're called the nine-step promises, and that may be good or bad, I don't know. But they're really the spiritual the world of the Spirit promises. If you're with God, these things happen. If you're not with God, they're not happening. And they can happen at 10 in the morning, and they can be gone at noon. So it's not like you get the ninth step and you get this certificate where you get the promises, and you're changed forever. Sorry, it just doesn't work that way. Because the way we're made by our Creator, and when I die, I will ask Him why He made us this way, we're always thinking of ourselves first. No matter how long you're in recovery, no matter whether you're a devout member of any religious sect, you're always going to think of yourself first. Is that true, or is that a... We do it automatically. And we all also react to every situation, how it's affecting me. I'll tell a funny story. Little granddaughter, it's grandma's birthday today, so I said, maybe you'll make grandma a picture or something. And she wrote her a beautiful card. It was beautiful. Grandma, I love you, you're so wonderful, blah, 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 blah. So you know what my reaction was, being an alcoholic? Well, I didn't get one. You get it? But I stopped right away. Because it's not my birthday, it's not a competition. But it, you can't help it. And it was so sweet. Anyway, we drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, well, what that means is we know it can lead to bad things. But the sensation is so elusive that even though it can do bad things, we want that sensation. They can't differentiate the truth from the false. So we can't see the result of the drink before we drink it because we're seeking the effect. And I've said that means you're only thinking about what's going to do for you, not to you. Anything that you're addicted to that has negative consequences. To them, their alcoholic life seems normal. And then here's the key. I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. Why? Because I'm managing my life. I'm in charge. I'm the center of my universe. And if I stay the center of my universe, I'm going to be irritable, restless, and discontented. Now, if I'm restless, that means I'm not at peace. If I'm irritable, it means for alcoholics, we're pissed off. And discontented means that I'm unhappy with everything. If we feel that way today, sober, then I know I'm not with God. Because God didn't wake up and say, Michael, I want you to be irritable, restless, and discontented at 10 o'clock in the morning. No. He wants us to be at peace with Him. I'll only be at peace, I only know serenity and peace when I'm with God doing His will. When I'm doing Michael's will, I'll be irritable, restless, and discontented. So if you're living sober and you don't have the spiritual awakening or the spiritual experience of God in your life and His power in your life, you're going to get restless and irritable, discontented. And if you're an alcoholic at a certain time, and we don't know when, right, Brian? We don't know. At a certain time, we will say, a drink's a good idea. So if you're sitting in the room and you haven't given yourself 100% to this program and you're just living sober, you're in a dangerous place. Because at a certain time, your mind will say, I need a drink. It'll be more subtle. It'll say, well, I've been sober a year. I can get sober any time. Or it'll say, well, you know, they're still giving me a hard time at home, and look at all that I've done, and blah, 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 and you're off and running. And then it happens, and you say, how'd that happen? Holy mackerel. And so we seek that ease and comfort which come at once by taking a few drinks. And then we succumb, we die to the desire. Think about it, you die to the desire because you have no power over it. Do you see? I had people succumb to cancer, not because they wanted to, but they had no power over it. And we have no power over alcohol. It's like a malignancy. The phenomenon of craving develops. Anybody have that happen? And then we get the spree, and then we emerge remorseful. Why are we remorseful? Because we know it's bad. And then we make a firm resolution not to drink, and then this goes over and over again. until the person can experience what he calls an entire psychic change. When we read the proposition exercise on fear, Dr. Thiepholz said it's going from a total narcissistic personality to one that's willing to give into the idea and turn itself 180 degrees towards a different power. And for us, that's a major thing. And then how we stay turned and what happens when we're turned is the result of the steps. He says, on the other hand, and strange as this may be, seem to those who don't understand, once a spiritual awakening has occurred, and to me that's where you have, you're living with God as the center of your world, you want that to be true, and you can see by working the steps when you're not in that relationship with him, so you get back to him. So you never get too far away from God. And the spiritual awakening is where I realize that I could be wrong, and I could be seeing things wrong, and that I need to have the spirit revealed to me the way they really are. Now, I always thought everything I saw was correct. Anybody else? I was wrong a lot. I think I was wrong maybe this morning. Who knows? Well, of course I was, because I thought, well, why didn't I get a card? You see? Well, there you go. Who put that in my head? Me. We can't help ourselves. Instead of saying, wow, that's great, honey. Look at that beautiful card. You see? And it wasn't a big deal, but it shows an example. And the spirit said, hello, you're wrong. And a spiritual awakening, somebody said, is the spirit revealing things to me. Revealing that his truth over my old ideas. So I have to let go of old ideas all the time and have revealed to me the new truth. It's a process. And you get better at it because you don't like to be in old ideas because the result's what? Nil. Now, what do they mean by that? If you're in an old idea at the moment, you're not with God and you're going to be restless, irritable, discontented. And if you stay that way too long, you'll drink again. But it says, once the psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he ever despaired of solving them, suddenly, notice the word suddenly, because that's a spiritual term, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. Now, when does that suddenly occur? Is it like after 5 days? Is it at 3 p.m? It just happens. And then you realize you're not thinking about drinking today. And it doesn't dominate you. And when you think about it, you say, boy, bad idea. Now, let me tell you, there's a warning label with that. That suddenly you're able to control your desire, but just as suddenly you can succumb to it. And we have to remember that. So we have to keep constantly moving forward towards God. And he says the only effort that is necessary is to follow a few simple rules. We should think about what they are. Think about them and let me know Wednesday what your rules are. I just thought of one. I'm always wrong. Two, I need to stay out of the way. I need to be loving and tolerant all the time. I mean, it's not that complicated. I need to be practice LPT, KCC. Men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal, doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me. Now, I'm really waiting for the first person to come to AA and come up to me and say, doctor, it's never happened. I have to go to them usually and tell them I'm going to help them. But this is what is the brokenness. This is complete defeat. It's described very well. I can't go on like this. I must stop, but I cannot. It's not that complicated, is it? You must help me. That's step one and two right there, isn't it? God, help me. I can't go on like this. Faced with the problem, if the doctor's honest, he feels inadequate. Why? No human power can relieve it. He can't talk me into the power. I can't group my way into the power. I can't trigger my way into the power. I can't do it. One feels that something more than human power is needed. You see, he understood that to produce the essential psychic change. Notice the word essential. It's not optional, it's essential. And he's talking about changing my personality from self-centered to God-centered. Doesn't mean we get perfect, but we've changed the compass of my life from me to God. Now we get off compass, don't we? How do you know? You're restless, irritable, discontented. I'm off course again, got to get the compass out. Where are you, God? Well, I'm over here, Michael, and you're over there. How's that working for you? It's actually pretty simple. I was trying to explain to somebody that the only time I can have a bad day is if I ruin it. This was at a little church men's breakfast we go to, and they looked at me like I was on a foreign planet. What's he talking about? I said, well, I'm the only one who can ruin my day. It's all how I see things. And he said, I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control, like just say no. That was really popular. I liked that. It sounded great, didn't it? Just say no. I was alive. A lot of you weren't. Nancy Reagan, just say no. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal which was to be settled on a certain date. They took a drink prior to the date, believing a lie, right? Couldn't see the truth from the false, admitted it may be somewhat injurious, but let's do it. And then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount, notice the word, superior to all, the paramount, the head of the mountain, to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape, they were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice and continue to fight. I think, you know, we've had people die that used to come to this meeting, and they had no power. They weren't any worse than me. They had no power. I don't have any power of my own today, but I have chosen to seek the power that gives me choice. And I have to remember that all the time. If I start thinking I have power, I've got this, then I start getting irritable, restless, and discontent because I'm running the show. And there you go again, Michael, ruined your day. The classification, he's going to do a little classification of alcohol. It seems difficult, and it's indeed outside the scope, but he's talking, the first one he talks about is psychopaths. Any psychopaths in the room? Who are emotionally unstable. And a psychopath is somebody with absence of empathy, blunting of affective states, highly manipulative, never wrong, narcissistic, and exploitative. Huh. Don't we're not going to talk anymore about that. None of us are like that. But it says they're always going on the wagons for keeps, but we can't keep that promise. They are over remorseful, make many resolutions, but never a decision. Look at what he says. We make many resolutions, but we're never a decision. Why? Because we really don't want to give up being the center of our universe. And a psychopath is someone who is the center of their existence. And all that they want, everything they need, everything revolves around them. And you're wrong if you're trying not to keep them from getting what they want or going to take away something that they have. Then there's the type of man who's unwilling that he cannot take a drink. I've met one of those recently. They plan various ways of drinking. They try to prove that they're not an alcoholic. He changes his brand or his environment. Now, he doesn't tell you how that works out because it doesn't. And then the third type is the type who always believes, this one can really be a killer, that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. Now, anybody who's come to AA and been sober for at least a day or two must believe that he can drink. Or he takes the drink, right? And everybody who comes here is sober for at least a day, usually. And so we drink again because we must think that we're able to. Now, of course, we're not, but we tell ourselves it's going to be okay, or we don't think of the consequences, right? Some people do, don't. And then there's the manic depressive type. Any of those in here? Who is perhaps the least understood by his friends, and whom a whole chapter could be written. Those are episodes of mood swings, and we now know that a lot of manic depression is chemical imbalance, and like lithium and medicines like that can treat that. But when they're not on medication, manic depressives use anything they can get their hands on to treat it. And that's why people with personality disorders, manic depression, they will frequently come to the rooms of AA, and they may need more than just working the steps. They may need appropriate medication. So you should never tell anybody what medicines they should or shouldn't take. On the other hand, there are treatment centers in Kansas where if you go through the door, you get a prescription for something like Zoloft or Prozac or something like that, which have a lot of side effects. And they just give it to you. These people don't know that this is a potentially dangerous drug, and there's no evaluation done to see if their depression may just be for being self-centered and not getting your way versus true clinical depression that needs to be treated. And if you're self-centered and depressed, but you still have clinical depression, you may need additional treatment. And so we shouldn't comment on that, but we have places here that everybody gets a pill. Then there are types entirely normal in every respect. I don't see any of those in this room. That was a joke. Nobody's laughing. They seem normal, but that's not true. Because if people looked at our minds, hello, if they put my mind on CNN all day, wouldn't that be something? Except in the effect alcohol has upon them, they are often able, intelligent, friendly people. I think they put that in there just for the person who was writing this chapter. The doctor wanted them to feel good. But we're never normal in every respect, are we? No. No. And we're abnormal in the effect of alcohol on us, but we're not really normal sober. And we can be friendly, able, intelligent, as long as we're getting our way. Remember on page 60? It says we'll do all, it will be great, as long as the show's going our way. But if it's not, then we try different things. All these and many others have one symptom in common. So it doesn't matter what your classification, you cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. He hammers that home. This phenomenon is an allergy. It's an abnormal reaction. It's never treated by anything. They used to have antabuse. They thought that would work. Well, people just drank and got really sick, or they stopped taking it. It never occurred to them that the alcoholic may stop taking antabuse, right? And it's never been permanently eradicated. The only relief is entire abstinence. Entire abstinence. This immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. That's a boiling water, like some kettle that's just boiling. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. Anybody agree with that? Most alcoholics never make it to AA. So what is the solution? So he's gonna give us what the solution is, and look what he's gonna do. He's gonna relate his experience in seeing the solution, what it looks like. So here's the first example. 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He was sick. He had a gastric hemorrhage, so he had severe liver disease. He had pathological mental deterioration. It was affecting his thinking. He lost everything worthwhile in life and was lonely living, one might say, to drink. Now, we don't see a lot of those come to AA because they never get here. But he got to treatment to the hospital. These people just go on and drink themselves to death. He frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. And I think that's true. And he frankly admitted it. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury, so his mind started to clear. And he accepted the plan outlined in this book, and he did it. Accepting the plan means that you don't think it's a good plan. It means that you've accepted the invitation to do it. How's that? That's a good way to say it. You've accepted the invitation and you attend the event. I've accepted the invitation of the plan and I'm going to attend the event. I'm going to do it. So here's what happened. 1 year later, he called to see me and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized him, but there all resemblance ended. Now, for those in AA a while, when you've seen somebody their first few days, and then you see them celebrate 6 months, and a year, and 18 months, I wish we would take a little video of them at their first meeting, or in the car before they come into the first meeting, or the night before. And from a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck, had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and confidence, contentment. Now, the self-reliance is because he knows he's centered on God. It's not that he's self-reliant. He has confidence in himself because of his relationship with God. God has given him this confidence. I talked with him for some time. I was not able to bring myself to feel that I'd known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time has passed, so he could see the change. The spiritual experience and spiritual waking is of no value to you if people can't see the change, if they can't see it. And how will they see it? By the way you react, by the way you act, by the way you treat them and others. This is talked about in the New Testament, that if you truly have faith in a relationship with Christ, that you will see the fruit of that relationship in a change. Now remember, this book was written by Christians trying to be the change and practice the change. So they were interested in steps that would help them show the change in their life brought about by a relationship with God. Then when he needs another mental outlift, he thinks of another case. The patient made his own diagnosis and decided his situation hopeless. I thought my situation was hopeless, but I knew AA worked. And so that gave me some hope, and I knew God could do it if I would just let him and ask him. I had this inkling that God could do it. The patient decided, he hid it in a deserted barn, determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party and in desperate condition brought to him, to the doctor. Following his physical rehabilitation, he had a talk with me in which he frankly stated that he thought treatment a waste of effort. Why? Because unless the doctor could assure him, which no one ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. He knew he had a hopeless condition. And he knew he couldn't keep from the first drink. And listen to this, his alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression so great. Now what's the power of these two stories? You're reading this book. Hopefully people start with doctor's opinion, but since it's not numbered, some alcoholics may think it's not important since it's Roman numerals. But he's showing us these two examples as testimony to what can happen if you do this deal in the next pages. His alcoholic problem was so complex, his depression so great, that we felt his only hope was through moral psychology, which I don't know what that was. I've looked it up. I've gotten a variety of answers, and we doubt if even that would have any effect. So here's how he ends his letter, and he signs it William D. Silkworth. In the original book, it's blank, 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 M.D. However, he did become sold, notice in parentheses, on the ideas contained in this book, accepted the plan, sold on the ideas, and has not had a drink for a great many years. So do you believe the doctor or not? You're reading this book. This is a powerful, and notice the next chapter is Bill's story of someone who was without hope and who was able to find the solution through the steps of the Oxford group, and then who went on to change his whole attitude and outlook on life, and met Dr. Bob after 6 months of not helping anybody, and we're here today. Think about that. He's not had a drink for many years. I see him now and then, as he is the finest specimen of manhood as one could wish to meet. He earnestly advised. Notice we isn't earnestly in how it works. Yeah. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through. And though perhaps he came to scoff, scoff means scornful derision. Any alcoholics ever do that? He may remain to pray. What does he mean by that? Well, prayer is a form of humility. It's the idea that you're broken. You need help. And who are you praying to? To a power greater than yourself. And you can see your brokenness and your need for God and God's power in your life. So I thought that was a really powerful pages. So we'll have time now for everybody to share. And then we'll pick up with Bill's story next Saturday, which is really, every time I read it, I get something different out of it. Thank you.